Words appear, based on a true story. Now, a pair of eyes in a Renaissance-era painting fill our view. They gaze out from a beatific bearded face. Elsewhere in the painting, a lamb stands on an altar. Another section depicts a shaggy-haired man, another a crowned woman of great beauty. A blanket drapes over the section, and hands in white gloves smooth the fabric reverently. Priests pack up the multi-paneled work of art in crates. A hammer strikes the end of a lid's crossbeam. A slim priest approaches. Subtitles.
Claude.
Put these clothes on. An older priest with fleshy cheeks nods solemnly and accepts the rugged workman's clothes. The others lower another panel from the painting's framework. One gazes after it wistfully as his brothers wrap it in a heavy blanket. Words appear. Ghent, Belgium. The priests carry a long, slim crate from the altar and down a corridor. The slim, holy man pauses and gazes after Claude, who takes up the rear in his workman's disguise. Now Claude and the slim priest finish loading the back of a truck. Take only the back roads. The Germans are coming from the east, so head south to Brussels. Yes, Father. God be with you, Claude. The truck travels over a winding cobblestone road. Turning, it passes through an archway. March 1943, Paris, France. A mounted Nazi flag sways in the breeze, with the Eiffel Tower standing in the distance. Our view tilts downward to a traveling motorcade. In one of the cars, a plump, pasty German commander rides in the back seat. Little swastika flags wave briskly from the front fenders. The motorcade turns, then comes to a stop in front of a museum's stately, columned entryway. An apple-cheeked officer with a mustache greets the commander, who marches past him briskly. Inside, the officer ushers the commander past a demurely pretty secretary with spectacles and strawberry blonde hair.
Voilà.
She nods tensely. The men continue into a gallery stocked with framed paintings from a range of eras. The commander removes his hat and lets his coat drop from his shoulders. The officer hastens to take them. His hands clasped behind his back, the commander walks down a row of paintings, appraising them with an approving nod. A cluster of marble statues stands at the far end of the room. The commander notices a wine bottle chilling in a bucket.
Champagne.
Champagne. Very nice. You must join me, Dr. Stahl.
Dr. Stahl.
Get another glass.
Again.
With pleasure. Leaving the gallery, the apple-cheeked Dr. Stahl calls to the secretary.
Claire, we need another champagne glass.
Oui, monsieur.
She briskly steps away. Stahl gazes after her with a scowl, then turns back to the gallery. Now, Claire steps into a hallway with white-tiled walls. It takes her into a supply room stocked with crates, dishware, and glasses. A young woman working the room turns as Claire selects a champagne glass. The secretary spits in it. The young girl cocks her head.
C'est pour Stahl.
It's for Stahl. She holds it out to the young woman, who spits in it as well. Claire raises the glass, then goes. Now Stahl drinks from it.
Also, das.
This one.
Und das.
And this one.
Nach Karin Hall.
To Karin Hall.
Here.
At her desk, Claire peeks over her shoulder.
Und das hier.
And this will be a present for the Führer in Berchtesgaden. The commander swaggers away from a painting with a satisfied smirk.
Noch was, Dr. Stahl?
What else, Dr. Stahl? August 1943, Milan, Italy. On the grounds of a devastated building, men and nuns pass sandbags down a line. A priest carries a bundle of rope. Local men assemble lumber into a fortification for a wall. Nearby, we spot a fresco showing Da Vinci's The Last Supper. In a lecture hall, a handsome, bespectacled man with silver-streaked hair and beard stands beside a slide projection showing the fresco.
This is Da Vinci's Last Supper. The British bombers leveled three walls and a roof.
Another slide shows a hilltop abbey.
This is Monte Cassino, founded in 529 by Saint Benedict. This is in February.
The next slide shows ruins.
This is Monte Cassino in March after we dropped 20 tons of explosives on it.
Mr. President, the simple fact is that we are at a point in this war
that is the most dangerous to the greatest historical achievements known to man.
But Professor Stokes, understand that this is war, and that lives are lost, and with them, oftentimes, their greatest achievements.
Yes, sir. There's something more.
Stokes presents a slide of a multi-panel painting.
This is the Ghent altarpiece. It is the defining monument of the Catholic Church. We now know that the Nazis have stolen it. Now, while we must and we will, sir, win this war, we should also remember the high price that will be paid if the very foundation of modern society is destroyed. Let's look at where we are now.
A slide shows a map of Europe marked with symbols.
The Russians are here. The Allies are here and here. In the next few months, God willing, we are all going to end up in Berlin, meaning that we will have blasted our way west through Poland, through Hungary, through Austria, north through Rome and Florence, and east through Paris. And then the question must be asked, who would make sure that the statue of David is still standing, or that Mona Lisa is still smiling? Who would be their protectors?
Well, Professor, it's a very compelling argument. What would you suggest?
I suggest you pull together young art scholars to get over there and identify the great works.
The young art scholars are already over there, fighting. You have a family?
I have a wife and a young son.
I might be asking a great deal of you then.
I'll do my best, sir.
March 1944, New York City. Now in military uniform with his beard shaved down to a mustache, Stokes steps into a room. Lying on a scaffolding, a younger man with his hair just starting to gray restores a painting on the ceiling.
It's a Michelangelo joke to be made.
You're just the man to make it.
You hungry?
You buying?
Uncle Sam is.
Pausing, the younger man rolls over, looks down at his associate, and finds him swaying proudly in his military coat and hat. He turns back with a wry chuckle. Now the two men sit at a bar.
How's Penny?
She's swell.
I do question her taste.
So does she. How's the ticker?
Still ticking.
Want to get in the war?
Stokes hands his associate a document. The younger man reads.
Monuments Men.
Signed by Roosevelt.
Oh, I see that.
And to put a team together and try to protect what's left and find what's missing.
Aren't you a little old for that?
Yes.
You want to go into a war zone and tell our boys what they can and cannot blow up?
That's the idea.
Okay, how many men?
For now, six.
Jesus.
With you, that's seven.
That's much better.
We're going to go through basic in Shrivenham, England, and then we wait for orders.
Basic?
Mm-hmm.
Basic training. Us. Oh, boy. You know, you're going to need a point man in England.
Yeah, Donald Jeffries.
He's a drunk.
You're a drunk.
That's true. Pass me that.
A bottle.
But isn't Donald Jeffries in jail?
No, he didn't go to jail. His father stepped in and paid the money back.
Hmm. How about his wife? Did she stick it out?
No, nobody stuck it out.
Stokes gives a sad smile, and the young artist shrugs.
So when do we start?
Now, titles appear as a well-dressed man with gray hair and unassuming features stands with workers on a high scaffolding outside a skyscraper. Columbia Pictures and Fox 2000 Pictures present a smokehouse production. Facing a window, the unassuming architect finds Stokes and his younger associate, both in uniform, watching him from inside. The architect gives a start, then salutes them. The Monuments Men. At a military office, the architect stands in fatigues as an officer issues him a rifle. In a pub, a square-jawed man in tweed nurses a whiskey and cigarette as he chats up a disinterested-looking woman. The barkeep sets a telephone before him. Now, a doctor smoking a cigarette coughs as he listens to the square-jawed man's heart through a stethoscope. The patient takes a puff of his own cigarette. Now in uniform, he approaches a dashing man painting an emblem on a fighter plane. The painter greets him with a broad smile. Later, presented with a uniform, the dashing painter puts on its black beret. In a theater, a short, slightly built bald man with glasses and a mustache makes notes at a director's table as dancers rehearse on stage. Behind him, Stokes sits with an envelope and a smile. He cocks his head patiently. Turning, the theater professional notices him. At a bunk, the small man cinches the belt of his oversized uniform with a sour glare. Now, a delivery man runs into a restoration room and trots upstairs to a heavy-set sculptor restoring a marble statue. A wedding ring gleams on the sculptor's finger as he reads the message and smiles. In a uniform supply house, the sculptor tries on a military-issue helmet. The small helmet perches atop his sizable head. The issuing officer gives him a larger helmet. It fits. The sculptor jauntily pushes it forward, lifts his chin, and saunters off. Now our view sweeps through an all-white model of a European city. We pass a row of trees near a bridge spanning a river. At the end of one street stands a stately building with a large dome and a swastika emblem at its front. A plaque above the entryway reads, "Führer Museum." Two tall pillars topped with spread-winged eagles stand out front.